950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Final day of the week. It's the Friday edition of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, and I am in for a live show today as we have lots to cover. Patrick Lilia on the other side of the production glass this afternoon. Patrick, how are things going with you? Did you watch any of Trump's grandiose speech last night?
I almost waved at the camera, forgetting that I'm not in the same room as the camera. We're talking about the Facebook live feed.
Oh, right, sure.
I read about the speech. I had some friends who were talking about it, and we were kind of, I'm sure, I don't want to steal your thunder, but it was kind of predictable for Trump, yet kind of boring for Trump as well.
That's a pretty good way to sum it up. And by the way, we'll be talking a lot more about what happened at the RNC in the second half of the show, as we're going to be joined by Hamline University political science professor David Schultz, who, of course, has his great blog over at schultzstake.blogspot.com, as we'll be rating how the Republicans did politically in terms of trying to get a convention bounce and how Democrats can counter, well, all of the lies that we heard during the speech last night. But, Patrick, I'm in the same boat as you. I have to admit I didn't watch the live speech either. I'm mostly just tuned in for some of the highlights of what he talked about. I mean, yeah, there's the usual things you can talk about, all of the lies using federal property, but we'll try to go a little deeper with David in terms of if this can really help out the Trump campaign post-convention. Biden last week really didn't get a convention bounce, although he really had nowhere to bounce since he's already up by nearly double digits in most of the poll aggregators. So lots more RNC coverage coming up at around 2:35. Open phone lines until then at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. As you've probably been hearing about in the news and the national shows, this guy Kyle Rittenhouse from Illinois, who drove to Milwaukee and murdered two people. Just unbelievable when you put how the police responded to him with how the police, of course, responded to Jacob Blake, who, by the way, the Chicago Sun-Times is reporting that Blake is still being handcuffed to his hospital bed. That was according to that report when his father came to visit. Meanwhile, we have this 17-year-old white supremacist goes and murders two people, and the cops handed him a water bottle and largely let him walk around even after he murdered two people. Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. By the way, it's not the only police controversy in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Not sure if you heard about this, but the police chief in that town also has quite the checkered past dating back to January of 2018. This was from a news conference he gave back in January of 2018 after four black people in that town, were arrested after robbing about $6,000 from an outlet mall and then crashing their getaway car. These are the comments that the sheriff of Kenosha, Wisconsin made after those arrests from January 25th, 2018. Quote, "I'm to the point that I think society has come to a threshold where some people aren't worth saving. We need to build warehouses, put these people in those warehouses, and lock them away for the rest of their lives." He continued, "Let's put them in jail. Let's stop them from going out and getting 10 other women pregnant and having small children. Let's put them away. We have to get to the point where we will no longer put up with the garbage people that fill our communities. They are the cancer of our society." That was, again, the head of the police in Kenosha, Wisconsin, back in January of 2018, responding to a question when four black people, were arrested for robbing an outlet mall in that town, stealing about $6,000 worth of merchandise, and then crashing their getaway vehicle. By the way, that's of course a crime, and they should be arrested. But the response of this police officer in Kenosha was saying, well, we just need to basically give them the equivalent of slave labor, put them away in a workhouse and throw the key away. Yeah, that was his response. Like I said, of course, robbing an outlet mall, stealing $6,000, that's definitely a crime. But really, a life in prison of doing unpaid labor. That's apparently what the police officer, the head of the police in Kenosha, Wisconsin, thinks. By the way, this also comes on the heels locally in Minnesota. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, the memorial of George Floyd was defaced by a young white guy who claims he was drunk when he defaced the memorial of George Floyd. Turns out he's not going to be charged by Minneapolis police. So think about that in terms of why people are so angry when we have, yeah, the police chief in Kenosha, Wisconsin, making these very racist statements, Kyle Wittenhouse largely getting away and being able to walk away from murdering two people, although he has been later arrested. Meanwhile, you have the guy who defaced the George Floyd Memorial, who's going to be walking away scot-free, and Jacob Blake, who apparently in his hospital bed was still handcuffed to the bed. Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. Couple more notes regarding some police news locally. This is according to Dina Winter of the Minnesota Reformer, who we've had on our show a couple of times in the past. Of the 50 arrests that were made on Wednesday, this was in the aftermath in Minneapolis when it was reported that police had killed a black man, when it turns out he actually committed suicide. And of course, there was rioting on Wednesday night and into Thursday morning. Of the 50 arrests that were made Wednesday night into Thursday morning, guess how many of them were actually from Minneapolis and St. Paul of those 50 arrests? Only about half of them were from people that were from Minneapolis and St. Paul. Some of those arrests, not surprisingly, came against people who were from outstate Minnesota. So as we saw in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder, there are still plenty of agent provocateurs that will take advantage of the situations that we have. Let's go to Philip in Lino Lakes, who wants to talk about the Pledge of Allegiance. Hey there, Philip. What are you thinking about today?
Well, I saw the part where he was complaining that the Democrats were going to remove the Under God clause from the Pledge of Allegiance, and the Republicans never would do that. And I thought it was interesting because of history. We've had 56 years of Republicans prior to 1954 that never, ever said the Under God clause in the Pledge of Allegiance, where we've only had 32 years of Democratic presidents in that time period. And we're 4 years past the midpoint of not having it.
Mm-hmm. Well, appreciate so the...
I'm a weird history person.
No, you bring up a great thing that I think a lot of people are unaware of. They assume, oh, well, Under God was always in the Pledge of Allegiance. And as you brought up, that was not always the case. That was something that was added, as you said, like in the 1950s, wasn't it?
1954. And so we had 62 years without it and 66 now with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're just about at the halfway point between when we had it and when we not had it, and it's something in history that people often forget when they say that, oh, we're a religious country, when turns out, yeah, when you look at the Pledge of Allegiance, that wasn't the case. So appreciate the phone call there, Philip, and bringing that up. Of course, that's just more red meat that Republicans like to use, and it's certainly something they did during their convention. It basically was in a convention that was pretty much just trying to appeal to the base of Donald Trump. So appreciate that phone call there, Philip. We are at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Again, we'll have much more on the convention with David Schultz coming up at about 2:35. A couple more local news stories before we head to the break. So feel free to chime in on this, because this is a controversy that happened on Wednesday when Minneapolis police did release that video of the man who ended up committing suicide when there were some people who thought he was actually killed by the police. And there are some that are not happy that this footage was released to media outlets and the general public, since it's very graphic. Of course, the police are saying, well, we were releasing this footage to try to stem some of the protests that were happening, since it was falsely reported that this guy was killed by the police when it turns out he wasn't. Yeah, I don't know. That is kind of a tough situation as to whether you release that video or not, since I certainly get up I certainly get the pent-up rage that people would have just assuming the police would lie about that. Because, well, let's be honest, they pretty much do that all the time. Just look at the initial police report that was filed with Breonna Taylor, and then so many other examples where police lie about what happens with their initial investigation. So I can see why people automatically assumed why they were lying. But, yeah, they did try to go and release that video and show now that this guy did commit suicide. So it puts them in a tough situation, but let's be honest, they kind of brought that on themselves, being that they've issued so many false reports in the past. And one more thing to bring up, we're going to go back across the river to Wisconsin former governor Scott Walker, who appeared on CNN early yesterday. And just want to bring this up because he was pressed by the CNN anchor Anderson Cooper, asking him about why Donald Trump, largely during the RNC, did not make any comments about what happened during the civil unrest in Kenosha. It was kind of funny if you saw the video, because as soon as Anderson Cooper starts pressing former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker on this, you can see Scott Walker move towards the camera and try to turn it off, meaning he largely did not want to talk about the project or talk about what happened whatsoever in Kenosha. So you can go ahead and check that out on YouTube or whatever your favorite video platform outlet is. But yeah, that's former Governor Scott Walker over there in Wisconsin, who I guess occasionally fills in on a conservative radio station in Wisconsin. Only know that because our buddies Dom and Crute over with the Devil's Advocates radio show usually like to poke fun at Scott Walker whenever he fills in and hosts that conservative talk show over in Wisconsin. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break and come on back with a few more local news stories. You're on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Minnehaha Falls Landscaping creates outdoor environments that grow beauty and support health and wellness. We provide everything needed for people and pollinators to grow healthy together in the home landscape. Contact us for landscape renovations, patios, walkways, retaining walls, butterfly gardens, rain gardens, and bee lawns. Minnehaha Falls Landscaping is a business rooted in healthy soil. We rely on soil health to beautify landscapes, restore ecosystems, and protect pollinators. We love sharing our soil secrets with everyone. Visit us at MinnehahaFallsLandscape.com.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to one, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to one for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
Nightingale at 26th and Lindale is open for in-person service. They have a lovely socially distanced patio and interior available for safe and thoughtful dining and drinks. Nightingale has reservations via resi.com with plenty of tables and bar spots saved for walk-up reservations. Nightingale's temporary summer hours are Sunday through Thursday from 4 to 10 p.m., Friday and Saturday 4 p.m. to midnight. Last call for full menu 30 minutes before close with curbside takeout by calling 612-354-7060. Info, menu, and updates at nightingalempls.com.
Hi, this is Laura. Listen to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast. Our individual health is connected to the health of each other, and connected to the health of the earth. We know the problems with the dominant food system, climate change, deadening soils, nitrates in the water, factory farming, injustice, concentration of wealth. How do we both as individuals and as a community step up and support a living food system which honors the earth? Tune to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. and remember to support your independent farmers.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. I'm an idealist working to change the world. My show, Ellie 2.0 Radio, highlights other past and present idealists and the incredible things humans can do when we work for the greater good. You remember that idea about the greater good, right? I've got a vision of a better world where everyone has a place at the table. Listen every Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. and be inspired on AM 950.
Connections Radio Show is all about tapping into our hardwired hunger to connect. We examine meaningful connections to ourselves, our community, and the world around us. By opening the door to innovative insights by a wide variety of interesting guests, we'll make the connections to something bigger than ourselves. Join me, Lori Fitz, your host of Connections Radio Show, and together we'll make the connections. Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, Friday afternoon, joined by David Schultz, coming up in the next segment, as we'll be talking about the RNC and grading how Republicans did with trying to get Trump to bounce back in the polls. Other news, though, Mike Pence was in Duluth today as he was making his pitch to reelect the ticket of Donald Trump. And Mike Pence, just point out a few of the highlights, if we call them that, from his speech in Duluth. He said, "With this president for this state, it's about jobs, jobs, jobs." I remember when Republicans kept saying that back in the early 2010s when they had that Tea Party insurgency. They said, "We're about jobs, jobs, jobs," even though that obviously wasn't the case. Well, Mike Pence back to that argument of jobs, 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 despite the fact in Minnesota our unemployment rate has risen from 4.7% in January of 2017 to now 7.7% this month. Also significant is that Pence was trying to appeal to northern Minnesota Democrats to join the Trump-Pence ticket, and they are having a little success with that, as earlier today, six mayors from traditionally Democratic areas ended up endorsing the Donald Trump-Mike Pence ticket. They included the mayors of Virginia, Chisholm, Ely, Babbitt, Eveleth, and Two Harbors. So, as we've talked about a few other times on the shows, the Democrats do have challenges trying to regain the foothold that they have in northeastern Minnesota. You can go back and listen to some of those conversations I had with Aaron Brown about northern Minnesota politics, as I always find it interesting to talk about how the DFL has to toe that line between labor interests and environmental interests, even though, at least I personally, don't think those two have to be mutually exclusive. Also in the news today, so Governor Tim Walz is expected to make a decision on whether Minnesota is going to accept that $300 in extra unemployment insurance money. That would be from that executive order that Donald Trump issued a few weeks ago, which said that people would get an extra $400 in unemployment insurance, but the catch was that the states were going to be on the hook for $100, which doesn't work for a lot of states since most of them are currently running deficits. And with most states in the U.S., states are not allowed to run deficits. But there's more to point out about this executive order that's supposed to provide this extra unemployment money and why it's really not going to help many people. So this is being reported over by a public citizen who's talking about this. It says, even if state governments sign on to this program that would, in theory, provide them up to an extra $400 in unemployment insurance for people, the jobless benefits might be out of reach for Americans in the greatest need. Only out-of-work Americans receiving more than $100 a week in state unemployment insurance are eligible for the federal aid, which means if your unemployment check that you currently get is less than $100, you're not going to see any of this potential bonus money from that executive order from the Trump administration. So that means pretty much those at the bottom of the income distribution, particularly workers who rely on tips or those that are self-employed, could see no additional federal benefit whatsoever. That is according also to Andy Stettner, who is an unemployment insurance expert at the Century Foundation. So Governor Walz going to be making a decision later today as to whether Minnesota is going to participate in that program. So far, it looks like only five states have signed up, and they're all five pretty red states, being Arizona, Texas, Louisiana, Missouri, and Tennessee. Also want to point this out. This is from Peter Callahan over at MinnPost. We, of course, had him on the show yesterday, and he's talking about how Governor Tim Walz is not happy with some of the actions that the federal government has been taking in terms of trying to get Minnesota aid for assisting people with the coronavirus. And he brings up three specific examples where Minnesota has largely not been getting any benefit from the feds. First up, this is something that I found really interesting, is that apparently personal protective equipment, or PPE, which you often hear about that the frontline workers need to help people that have COVID-19 that are in the hospital. Yeah, apparently that's no longer going to be covered by the feds, so it's completely up to the states. Also, for testing, that largely is up to the states as well. And that's been the case since the beginning. And then this is also key going back to what we talked about with unemployment. So keep in mind that this money that Trump signed for his executive order that's supposed to pay for this extra unemployment insurance money, that's actually coming from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency that's supposed to deal with emergencies, which is obviously what we have going on right now with COVID-19. Well, money is being taken away from FEMA to fund, which is pretty much this worthless unemployment program that was put in place by Trump. And by the way, as I said, only 5 states have signed up for. So yeah, that's money that's being taken away potentially from helping states deal with the COVID-19 pandemic and being put towards this unemployment bonus money, which won't even go to Americans who are in greatest need, since low-income Americans aren't even eligible for these unemployment bonuses. So there you go. I don't know how you necessarily put a bumper sticker on that, since we're kind of getting wonky talking about these things, but those are specific examples, very specific examples on how the pandemic has certainly been mismanaged by the Trump administration. Couple more things to point out before we head to break and then talk to Professor David Schultz of Hamline University. So a coalition of environmental groups and canoe outfitters are alleging that Republican Congressman Pete Stauber of Hermantown and Tom Emmer of Delano illegally pressured federal agencies to remove requirements from mineral leases later granted to Twin Metals, the company that, of course, is proposing a copper nickel mine within the same watershed as the Boundary Waters canoe area. So yeah, they're alleging that both these congressmen, Republicans, by the way, Pete Stauber and Tom Emmer, were illegally pressuring these federal agencies to be a little bit more lenient on some of these permits that were issued for the Twin Metals mine. We'll have more on this next week as we are going to be speaking to a guest from the Friends of the Boundary Waters. I think we've had them on the show a few times in the past as they've been doing a nice job up in northern Minnesota trying to fight some of these mines and other projects that are being proposed in northern Minnesota. And finally, facing a major budget shortfall, the Minnesota Department of Human Services is preparing to lay off staff and slash millions of dollars in spending on state-run programs that serve vulnerable populations as well as sex offenders. What they're pretty much doing is, yeah, they are cutting money from programs that, well, help people that are in group homes. You're talking about people who have mental and physical disabilities that have to live in group homes. They are cutting funds that, well, fund some of these state group home houses. The budget cuts disclosed in a memo to state employees yesterday include shifting the operation of some group homes for people with disabilities to private operations, and the termination of a satellite program for treating sex offenders at the state prison in Moose Lake. The agency also plans to leave dozens of positions unfilled at the state's main psychiatric hospital in St. Peter and lay off 15 employees at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, which houses about 740 sex offenders at state-operated treatment centers. So those are some pretty concerning cuts, especially when you're talking about how some of these group homes for people with disabilities are not going to be getting state funding anymore. That is very concerning, since already a lot of the group homes, both public and private, are severely underfunded, and this certainly isn't going to help. All right, we're going to take a break and come on back and talk about the RNC. We'll be grading how the Republicans did and talking about how the next few weeks of the presidential race could shape up, as we'll be talking with David Schultz coming up next here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, this is Laura. 2020 has been marked by a virus, growing evidence of the climate crisis, a political uprising, and many of us are feeling unsettled. Together, we get by with a little help from our friends. Together, we find the resilience to meet the moment. Regenerative economics holds great promise for improved systems. Instead of a dog-eat-dog world, let's create a trust economy, one that honors the earth and sees the limitless value of each individual. When we buy from each other, we know each other. Go to AM950radio.com and see the wonderful independent businesses AM950 relies on to exist. These businesses are more than advertisers. They are our friends. We all get by with a little help from our friends. Help us build the AM950 business ecosystem. If you know of a company, service, or product that belongs in the AM950 community, let me know. Laura at AM950radio.com, or you may also call the station 952-946-8885. AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Even though these are challenging times, All Energy Solar is still committed to providing you a cost-effective, environmentally friendly energy system through their zero-contact protocol. Solar remains a great value and long-term investment, but some of the incentive programs will be expiring soon. All Energy Solar can walk you through the entire process. They can evaluate your property by phone or webinar, and can even complete preliminary design work without visiting your home. So start saving on your energy bill today and visit allenergysolar.com.
Hey, I guess we found a new name for our show.
Really? What's the new name?
Pilots Progressive Party.
How did you ever come up with that?
Pilots our name and progressive fun is our game.
Well, what's that about?
It's a one-hour news show with progressive guests and information you normally don't hear on the radio.
Well, that's so exciting. I have a few ideas for guests myself.
I know they'll be progressive.
Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on AM 950.
The progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hazel's Northeast is back and offering some of the most creatively prepared comfort food you'll find. Delicious breakfast options include the slow-cooked brisket hash, chicken fried steak, and the famed drunken banana French toast. Or for lunch and dinner, there's Swedish meatballs, wild rice gumbo, and more. Hazel's Northeast is open Wednesdays through Saturdays, 8 to 8, and Sundays, 9 to 2. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family-owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis. Make your reservation now at hazelsne2go.com.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies tonight with a high near 80, tonight cloudy with a low around 56, and Saturday sunny with a high around 77. Cafe Latte has reopened to indoor dining at 50% capacity, so come check out their pizza and wine bar or get a treat from the bakery made fresh daily. Plus, you can still do online ordering and choose from their ever-changing selection of award-winning salad sandwiches and soups, or do takeout along with gift cards. Located off Victoria and Grand, online at cafelatte.com. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Friday edition of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. So we're going to switch gears now and talk national politics and grade how the Republicans did last night in trying to close the gap that they have as they currently have Donald Trump, of course, trailing Joe Biden in the polls. So joining us to sort through what happened at the RNC this week is Hamline University professor David Schultz, who also has his blog over at schultzstake.blogspot.com. Hey, David, how you doing today?
I am doing great. It's a gorgeous day, and hopefully people are listening to the radio while getting outside.
Yeah, most certainly. So talking about the convention as a whole, obviously if you watched through, they did nothing whatsoever to try to appeal to anyone outside of their base. But I will at least give Republicans credit because they did do a nice job of obviously rallying their base and trying to play to the different factions within the Republican Party, whether it's people who are, well, in favor of trying to restrict abortion rights, the pro-life crowd, or other segments of the crowd or other segments of the party, pro-gun folks. They did a nice job making sure that they did appeal to their different groups within the party. And of course, they also did a good job rallying sentiment against Democrats, but certainly didn't do much to reach beyond their party base. What were your thoughts on how Republicans did?
Well, let's set up a contrast here. If I think the goal of the Democrats the week before was to hold the base together, you know, a much more complex base of in a diverse party, you know, racially, politically, and so forth, is to hold them together, get them excited to vote, and expand the base. I mean, the Democrats were, if I can say it, were trying to be more inclusive and expansion in terms of it. I think that'd be a pretty good description. I think most people listening here would agree. I think what the Republicans tried to do was to simply, what, hold their base, mm-hmm. get them even more excited than they were before, make this a party that's all about Donald Trump, which it was. That's, you know, and that also fits into why they didn't adopt a new platform. And then perhaps either scare off Democrats from saying, well, gosh, you really don't want to support Joe Biden, and at the same time probably try to convince swing voters, especially those suburban female voters who are so important. Listen, if you're not going to vote for us, just don't vote for Joe Biden. So I think it was an effort to use race, fear, I'm going to say race again, race, fear, race, to try to scare off swing voters and at the same time to rally Republicans. And going into the convention, this is something that I think progressives and Democrats have to worry about right now. There is what we call an enthusiasm gap in the two parties, that if you look at the percentage of Republicans who are enthusiastic for Donald Trump, it's about 9 points higher than the percentage of Democrats who are enthusiastic for Biden. And this is critical, because 4 years ago, it's not that Donald Trump got so many more votes in 2016 compared to Mitt Romney in 2012. It's that what? Democrats were not as excited by Hillary Clinton. Swings were not excited by Hillary Clinton. And they largely stayed home, and Trump won. And that's what Trump wants again. An excited Republican base and a depressed Democratic base and lethargic swing voters. That's the formula that he wants. And that's what he was trying to do, and what the party was trying to do this past week, set up that scenario.
Yeah, it's kind of the case where you have the base of Donald Trump, which is an inch wide but a mile deep, and then the Democratic base, or the Joe Biden base, which is, yeah, a mile wide but an inch deep, where people just aren't, they're saying they're going to vote for him, but they're not necessarily enthused about it. And as you said, that's what Republicans tried to do. They tried to say, well, to Democrats, oh, just don't go and vote for Joe Biden. You don't necessarily have to go for Donald Trump, but you're just going to get chaos if you have Democrats in power. And of course, one of the ways they did that at the convention was just throwing out a whole bunch of lies, which is obviously what we saw from Trump's speech last night. So my question to you, at least in terms of strategy, how did Democrats go about countering a lot of these lies that were thrown out about Joe Biden and other Democrats at the convention? How do they counter that argument that Republicans tried to make?
Well, I think there's a couple of different things here. One, they're not going to be able to counteract the lies with the Republicans. That's just over. I mean, what is it now? I even lost track. Maybe you remember now. At some point, the Washington Post had cataloged, what, well over 10,000 lies by the president. I don't know what the number is now. You know, I've lost track. You know, but at the end of the day, his base doesn't care. Okay, I think to some extent, the swing voters, again, especially the suburban female voters, who I think are still the most powerful voters in the country, know he's lying. And I think at some point, you don't have to keep saying he's lying. What you now have to do is counteract in a different way. And where you have to counteract it is not just hope that it's fear of Donald Trump. You know, fear of Donald Trump, anger against Donald Trump was successful in 2018 to the Democrats doing well. I think in this election, because the geography is back to the swing states, not just swing congressional districts, the Democrats need to do more. If I had one criticism of the Democratic convention the week before, it was a little shy in terms of articulating a policy vision for the United States. And I don't mean in detail, but saying this is our vision of what we want to create. This is the world that we want to have. And I would make that statement very, very clear and make that statement very, very, I guess, loud and clear, especially to those swing voters and to the Democratic base. The other thing that I think Trump and the Republicans are trying to do at this point is to use the post-George Floyd movement, Black Lives Matters, the demonstrations, and more importantly, I was going to say, really the riots that have occurred to try to scare suburban voters, to scare them in a sense of saying that if you elect Joe Biden, this is going to be in your neighborhood. And I'm going to draw a parallel here. If so many people have been saying that Trump is running like Nixon in 68 with, you know, a law and order message, I think Joe Biden is getting close to having to do a Hubert Humphrey moment. And what I mean by that, in 1968, because Humphrey was unwilling until the very last minute to break with Lyndon Johnson and to criticize the Vietnam War, some people argue that cost him the election, because it was the Robert Kennedys, it was the Eugene McCarthys who criticized the war that generated the excitement. There's going to be a point, I think it has to come very soon, that Democrats, and especially Biden, have to draw a clear line in the sand, make it unequivocally clear they support First Amendment rights for demonstrations. They support the right of people to express themselves. But at some point, they're going to have to come and make a break and say that we don't support the rioting and looting. We don't support the damage that's occurring. Now, I know some of the progressive listeners are probably choking and saying, oh, my God, what are you saying, Schultz? But keep in mind, those suburban voters are concerned about this issue. And the Democrats and Biden need to very quickly come out and make it clear the vision that Trump is trying to paint Biden as the candidate of law, of disorder, of rioting, and so forth. That is not who he is. Remember, you either define or be defined, and what Trump is starting to do right now is define Biden, and Biden's not taking enough action to respond.
What I find interesting about that is that I agree Republicans do have something to work with politically in terms of trying to swing some of those suburban voters back towards the Republican way. I'm urged towards the Republican policies, even if we look at polling on Black Lives Matter, for instance. Mm-hmm. I was looking this up how, yeah, the support for Black Lives Matter supported or spiked earlier this summer. It was up above 50%. Now it has started to drop back down a little bit, and the opposition to Black Lives Matter has also increased over the past few weeks. But what's also in there as well is that Trump's handling of race relations and protests has still largely remained overly negative. It hasn't really changed much even since the George Floyd murder. So it's an interesting dynamic, because clearly there does appear to possibly be some backlash against the protests mm-hmm. and the Black Lives Matter movement, but I don't know if the Trump campaign has necessarily done a good job on trying to capitalize that. I just think it kind of comes down to the point that he's not subtle about it whatsoever. He goes out and yells, law and order, law and order, law and order, when I think saying something about public safety would be a much mm-hmm. better angle for him to take on that.
I think you're absolutely right, but you know, I'm actually about to say here, and I'm not going to use the word on the air, when he says law and order, he's three times, he's essentially using the N-word three times. Let's just call it what it is. Mm-hmm. We know what he's doing here, okay? And again, we're not going to say that word on the air whatsoever.
Right.
But what I'm getting at here also is that what he's doing is what happened again in 2016. Remember in 2016 that polls suggested that Trump and Clinton both had high disapprovals of about 55 to 60%. In many ways, because Clinton was running as a Democrat after two terms of Obama, she was sort of running as the third term for Obama. This became a referendum on her, and she lost. When 2018 happened, the 2018 elections, midterms, that was a referendum on Donald Trump. Republicans lost. What Trump is trying to do, and your contradiction hits at this perfectly, the public doesn't like, or I'd say the majority of the public doesn't like Trump, his stand on race, his stand on a whole bunch of different things. Trump knows that. What he's trying to do now is make this yet again a referendum on Joe Biden. Paint him as, again, the candidate of urban disorder, of fires, of I'm trying to think, of the worst of Black Lives Matters. I was trying to think of all the different things that he said the other night. But basically, make this a referendum on Joe Biden and therefore put the pressure off of Donald Trump. And that's what's going on. And that's why I say it's defined or be defined. And there's a dangerous point here where that if Biden doesn't quickly now respond on a couple of issues and push it back onto Donald Trump, Trump is going to be successful in painting Biden in terms of whatever he wants to do. And that's the issue that I see right now. I mean, that's what they were doing, especially last night, is painting a portrait of Joe Biden, that Biden has to very quickly reverse the logic or reverse the burden. I'm not sure what I'm looking for here, but I think everybody understands what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Certainly early this summer, Biden was very clear in saying, I'm not in favor of the defund the police movement. So you're kind of thinking he almost needs to do that same sort of thing when it comes to the protests that we're hearing about and seeing, where he needs to go out and flat out say, I'm not in favor of violent protests. I empathize with why people are angry, but I'm not in favor of the violent protests. You're thinking that's kind of the strategy he needs to take to make sure that he can keep those suburban voters on board with him, something along those lines.
I do. Now, clearly, I'm not a speechwriter. I would figure out a better way of saying it.
Right.
When we look at public opinion polling, there's no question that even those critical suburban voters, and we keep coming back to suburban voters because that's the battleground. It's the suburban voters, in the swing states. But those suburban voters don't like most of them. I'm going to say don't like. The appeals to race. They saw the George Floyd video. They don't like that. But they also don't like to see what? The looting and burning. And so what has to occur here is Biden making it very clear. And I would, again, maybe I'm not phrasing it right. I think he says in two different ways. One, there's a serious problem of race, and people have a right to express themselves. Part two, nobody has a right to loot, burn, and damage private property or to hurt others. And make that a clear message. And again, I think there's a better way of phrasing that than I just did, but that's the message he has to get out there.
We're speaking with David Schultz, Hamline University political science professor, and I want to talk about another aspect of campaign strategy for the Democrats and something I noticed during the DNC a couple of weeks ago. The one area, when you look at polling, where Donald Trump is still actually ahead of Joe Biden has to do with the economy. And yeah. I'm just picturing this nightmare scenario happening come October for Democrats, where all of a sudden you have Donald Trump in the middle of October saying, we just got word that a vaccine is on the way and things are going to be going back to normal. Therefore, the focus of the campaign shifts back to the economy, which is obviously a big strength for Donald Trump. And I'm just concerned, mm-hmm. especially at the DNC last week, that Democrats didn't really do a good enough job trying to chip away at that lead Donald Trump has on the economy. It kind of goes back to that old Karl Rove strategy where you try to attack your opponent's biggest strength. And I just kind of feel like, yeah, Democrats are leaving one little opening for Donald Trump come this October to have that surprise where he can say, we got a vaccine coming, things are going back to normal, look at how great the economy could be.
No, I think you're absolutely correct on that one. And that even if we take us back 6 months ago, I know people were excited about saying, record stock market, 3.5% unemployment. However, as many people know, not everybody was winning. We still hadn't seen wages go up for most people or very much. Most people hadn't recovered or barely recovered from the 2008 recession. The gaps between the rich and poor were worse than ever. The racial gaps in terms of wealth and income were at all-time record highs. I think this was an opportunity. And Democrats have to do this now, is to make that economic argument, is to say that, yeah, look at the Wall Street right now. Yeah, Wall Street's doing well. Main Street's not doing well. Elm Street's not doing well, whatever we want to say here, and hammer that home really powerfully. Because you're right. If they don't do that, I think you're exactly correct, because all of us know in our hearts he's going to declare come, what, third week or fourth week of October, we're close to a vaccine, we've made the purchases, health is around the corner, and people are going to jump for joy. The Democrats need to focus on being prepared, on hammering that right now, chipping that away, at perhaps the tertiary issues. I mean, I still think health care is a major issue, especially when the fact that so many people have lost their health care during the pandemic. They need to be talking about that too. But there's no question that you know, I'll use the Carville line too. It's the economy, stupid, and the Democrats can't concede the economy.
Final question for you, David. Last week, we didn't really see Joe Biden get much of a bounce from his convention. Do you think we're going to see any bounce potentially for Donald Trump, or are these poll numbers largely pretty much set in stone for now?
I think they're largely set in stone, that the America has already made up their mind about the two candidates, and it's really a question if they're going to show up and vote. Now, there's one of my co-authors, Scott McLean. He teaches at Quinnipiac College in Connecticut. I'm going to give him a shout-out here. He works on the Quinnipiac poll. This week, he has a wonderful piece in Newsweek talking about why the era of convention bumps is largely gone. And he's pointed out that over the last few years, they've gotten the bumps have gotten like what shallower and shallower simply because of the polarization. So I don't expect much of one for Donald Trump either. Maybe a point or two, but well within, you know, margin of errors. We are probably largely where we are right now, and the question is going to be in, what, the next 65 days. Again, what happens, not necessarily in the national public opinion polls, but remember, we have to keep saying this till Election Day. It's those few swing states, the Minnesotas, the Pennsylvanias, the Michigans, the Wisconsins. That's what decides it all. And again, if I'm Joe Biden, if I'm the Democrats, I want a strategy aimed to win over those states.
That's Hamline University Professor David Schultz. Follow his blog over at schultzstake.blogspot.com, and we shall see if we get any bounce after the convention. Hey, David, as always, appreciate the time today.
My pleasure. Thanks to the audience.
All right, we'll come on back and have the final segment of FYI Politics coming up next.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about the joy of live fire cooking. Cooking over a live fire is the oldest and most basic form of cooking.
What's new is in the way a fire is handled and its heat is managed.
It's easier to experience and enjoy the smell and taste of food cooked over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs live fire grills, fire pits, and ovens. Let us help you experience the smell, the taste, the fun of cooking with fire.
Pizza was first made and is still best made in an open fire oven. The radiant and conductive heat of a live fire is unmatched for wood roasting and baking artisan breads too.
Come see the many ways you can cook over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces strives to maintain a healthy environment for their customers and employees. They invite you to visit weekdays 9:30 to 5:30 and Saturdays 9:30 to 4. You'll find an uncrowded and comfortable social space to learn about Woodland Stoves' many indoor and outdoor fireplace products. More at woodlandstoves.com.
I'm Rick Unger. You've heard the screamers, you've heard the shouters, the haters, the beraters. Well, now it's time to listen to a real conversation, a rational conversation. Now it's time for the Rick Unger Show.
Listen to the Rick Unger Show every weekday from 5 to 7 p.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Stream at am950radio.com or search KTNF on the TuneIn app.
Nightingale at 26th and Lindale is open for in-person service. They have a lovely, socially distanced patio and interior available for safe and thoughtful dining and drinks. Nightingale has reservations via resi.com with plenty of tables and bar spots saved for walk-up reservations. Nightingale's temporary summer hours are Sunday through Thursday from 4 to 10 p.m., Friday and Saturday 4 p.m. to midnight. Last call for full menu 30 minutes before close with curbside takeout by calling 612-354-7060. Info, menu, and updates at nightingalempls.com.
back for the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. And just going back to that conversation I had with David, you kept hearing us talking about how Biden needs to reach the suburbs. The suburbs are what matters for the Biden campaign. And that largely is true, given Joe Biden's background and, well, what his campaign strategy is. I think it's too late to go and try to switch to a base strategy of turning out the base, even though I personally think that's a better strategy in terms of a presidential campaign. But no, he's going all in for the suburbs and moderate voters. Remains to be seen whether that will be successful. Traditionally, for Democrats, that strategy has not worked. But I do give Biden credit. He's being who he is, which is a moderate Democratic politician, and he is going for those moderate suburban voters. I think he would be a whole lot less successful if he tried to run a base campaign. Like I said, remains to be seen if this will work, since traditionally that hasn't really paid off for Democrats, but maybe it will, being that Donald Trump is, well, shall we say, a special case of a politician who is so unpopular that even Biden might be able to overcome that campaign strategy. Maybe it will end up working. It is kind of funny, too, because Biden is an unabashed moderate Democrat, so also remains to be seen whether these attacks as to saying whether Biden is an extremist or not, whether those are going to be successful. Let's go to Randy in St. Cloud, who will get the final word on the show today. Hey, Randy.
Well, how you doing?
All right,
it's been
here.
A while.
It has been a while. Only got about a minute for you, unfortunately.
Okay. I just think that we're looking at Joe Biden running Hillary Clinton's exact same campaign. I just heard Rahm Emanuel on CNBC saying that they're going for the moderate, sensible suburban voters. Welcome to four more years of Donald Trump. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Let's not go after the more people who don't vote than do vote. Let's not try to get them excited to come in and vote. No. Let's go for Republicans and see if we can get enough of them to switch. What a really stupid strategy. But that's what we're going with. So welcome to four more years of Trump.
We'll see. The one part I will give Joe Biden credit for on his strategy and appreciate it, Randy, is that he's at least unabashed about that strategy. I think a problem Hillary ran into in 2016, don't have a time to get into it, was that I think she tried running kind of a quasi-based campaign, and people largely were able to kind of see through that and think, well, I don't trust Hillary Clinton on these issues. At least with Biden, he is running as an unabashed centrist Democrat, and who knows, maybe it will be successful given how unpopular Trump is. All right, that's all the time I got. We got Matt McNeil up next.